This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Charlie Kirk suspects sick jokes after the shooting that claimed the life of Kirk. Antonite, are others in on the murder plot? Did he have help? Now he's being called a furry freak. What, if anything, did that have to do with motive? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Breaking news tonight. The lone shooter, the assassin that gunned down 31-year-old Charlie Kirk.
We already have a suspect in custody. Tyler Robinson, a 22-year-old Utah resident.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him.
Did he have help? Did he act alone? Again tonight, breaking news as we go to air. But for those of you just joining us, this is what happened.
So, do you know how many transgender Americans have been mass shooters over the last 10 years?
Too many. Okay.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Great.
Chaos on the Utah Valley University campus as thousands of students and locals run from Kirk's booth, screaming. Kirk's security team rushes in to action, putting pressure on Kirk's wound and escorting him to a waiting SUV to take him to the hospital.
At this hour, law enforcement remaining mum whether or not the shooting suspect had help. Were others in on the plot? Did they help him retrieve the gun, retrieve his vehicle? What do we know? As we go to air, we are learning that the Kirk shooting suspect is tied to the murder scene through DNA. Straight out of Sydney, Sunra joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What DNA?
Well, on both a screwdriver found on the roof of the Low C Center where he took that shot, and on the towel where he wrapped the rifle and left it in the woods, hoping to go back for it later.
Guys, very, very typical that DNA is found, but not necessarily on the murder weapon. We are also learning at this hour that the suspect is no longer cooperating, not speaking to police. Why? Now we learn he is being placed on a, quote, special watch. We know he told his family he would rather die than go into custody. Joining us, an all-star panel, but first I want to go to a very special guest joining us, Tiana Lau, a witness to the Kirk shooting. Tiana, what happened? What did you witness?
So it was into the second question, and that was when I heard the gunshot go off. I was with my friend. We thought it was a prank, so we immediately looked up to the sky thinking that maybe there's a firecracker. I didn't realize the severity of the situation until everyone started ducking down and screaming to get down and run.
Where were you exactly in relation to Kirk?
I was a few feet away, so he has a ground floor and there's three steps going up. So I was on the third step.
What exactly, Tiana, did you hear?
I heard the gunshot go off, and that was when I started hearing a bunch of people started crying and screaming to get down. I was terrified. Yeah.
When did you realize you had heard a gunshot?
It was into the second question. It took me a really long time to process because it just happened so suddenly. I mean, I didn't even know that he got shot at that moment until I started running inside and started hearing people scream.
What did you see? You hear the gunshot. At first, you don't realize exactly what it is. That's very common because I don't think, Tiana, that your mind, you're not expecting to hear a gunshot. You might think, oh, that was a car backfiring, or it was a helicopter or something else. There's fireworks. That's what people typically think because in their world, they're not used to hearing gunshots ringing out. At the moment you heard what you now know to be a gunshot, what did you see?
He got shot on his left side, and I was sitting on his right side of him. So I was really shocked once I heard he got shot, because I personally did not see anything since it happened so fast. For me, as I was running back into the building, I kept turning back to see if anything did happen to him. But I at first didn't even see him fall down. After looking up at this guy and then looking down, I didn't see him fall down or anything immediately. So when I started running back in and I looked back, I didn't see anything else.
When you did look back, what was there to see?
It was too much. There was too many crowds. Also, my vision was hazy because I was crying too much, unfortunately.
When you think back on how close you were, if he had missed Kirk, he could have shot someone in the crowd. Have you considered that?
I was actually talking about this to my friend, because the thing is that if I was sitting a bit closer to him, I would have been shot along with my friend, who I really care about. So I was worried about that.
What is your take on the hatred that must have led the shooter to pull the trigger? Just put so many people, including yourself, in mortal danger over what? Because you don't like what somebody says?
It's unbelievable to me, because I have many friends from a lot of different political backgrounds, and I would never consider harming absolutely anyone just because of what they believe in. It's sad to think that there are people out there that want to harm others that don't have their same opinion.
Are you a student there?
Yes, I am. I'm currently a junior right now.
What are you studying?
I'm studying marketing.
Tiana, when you went to the rally, did you feel completely safe?
Personally, I did. I mean, I love my school. I personally felt really safe being there. Nothing in the past has ever happened. I personally didn't think that we needed a lot of security measures until this happened. So I was really shocked.
Tiana Lau joining us, who was there at the time Charlie Kirk was gunned down. You stated that everyone began running once they realized it had been a gunshot that rang out. What did everyone think had happened? You stated, "I turned back to see if anything happened to Charlie." And you couldn't tell because he was mobbed. Why did you think it was about shooting Charlie?
So, of course, no one in my row immediately knew what happened because there were so many people in the front. So I didn't know what happened until people started ducking down. I also didn't really know if he got shot until I got into the building and people started calling their families, saying that he got shot in the chest and then the neck. I was hearing a bunch of misinformation, but I didn't think that it was anything severe because I didn't know exactly what happened.
You stated that there was a lot of confusion. No one knew what was happening. And you actually think your brain kind of blacked out. Describe that.
Yes, I also completely forgot what the person asking the question was even talking about right before the gunshot went off. I was just thinking, all in my head, really, was, is there going to be a second gunshot go off? I felt responsible for my friend since I invited her to this event. So that's really all I was thinking about. But I was also concerned for the safety of others on campus.
You took cover in a classroom. What happened?
Yes, it was during that time that we started going up to the second floor, we're going to any classroom that we could see because there was a professor there guiding us. It was in there that me and my friend started crying our eyes out. And we started just going into this corner because there's a bunch of other students in there that didn't know what was going on. They just knew that they were in lockdown. And that was when a professor started coming in and comforting us and telling us that it was okay, that we're safe because they caught a suspect. And I thought, yeah, the suspect must be the right person. I felt safe in that moment. And even though it wasn't the right suspect in the end, it still provided me comfort until the moment we left campus.
What went through your mind when you realized the shooter was still out there, that the old guy they got out of the front row area was the wrong suspect.
I was in disbelief. I felt very unsafe. I thought, who could this person be? I mean, it is possible that he could be a student that I have crossed paths with. You never know who it is. It could be my neighbor. I did feel very unsafe throughout the remaining days.
What kind of security was set up when Kurt was speaking?
Yes, so I knew previously, because of my friend's job, that there were going to be about 8 bodyguards at the scene protecting him. And I thought that that would be enough. But once I started going in, I also previously signed up to go to this event. And that was, and I was expecting for them to check for tickets, maybe check our bags. But I just walked in and they handed me a flyer asking, hi, there's going to be an event today. Do you know about this event? And I said, yeah, I am. I actually signed up. And I was shocked about how easy it was to get in. No one checked our bags. There was no other security measures that I could see. It was very open.
Before the gunshot rang out, what was the atmosphere? What was the mood in the crowd?
I thought that for the most part, it was still pretty peaceful. There were a few audio issues. So there were people on around my row that were screaming to make the volume higher since we couldn't hear the person asking the question. But other than that, it wasn't so bad. I mean, for me, it seemed like a peaceful debate. Everyone was still, for the most part, cheery. There was nothing that I could see.
You stated earlier that the atmosphere was very happy and peaceful.
Yes, in my opinion, I know that at these types of events, there's always going to be someone, I don't know, rioting or something like that. I did see some students, a part of the LGBTQ community, at the top balcony. But even we're very peaceful. No one else was insulting each other. To me, everything was fine.
What do you make of the aftermath when people are making jokes about Kurt getting murdered?
Yes, I do get pretty sensitive about this subject because I do have some friends that have been celebrating about this. To me, it doesn't matter who it is. I feel personally connected to this event now because, of course, I was there. But I don't think that we should be celebrating about anyone's death. I understand if they do not agree with his views, but it doesn't matter who it is, my neighbor, maybe someone that I also do not agree with, but I would not be celebrating anyone's death. This is a very sensitive time, especially for those that were traumatized by this event.
Tiana, especially in light of the fact that as close as you were to the front, if he had been off or if the wind had blown a different way with a gust of wind, I mean, anything, that could have been you or your friend. When your associates, your colleagues, make fun of this, do you just ignore it or do you confront them?
Yes, when I'm currently not speaking to them right now, especially when I was really sensitive since I was there. So I did tell them that it really hurts me personally because I told them specifically as well, if I was in that situation, if I was shot, would they be celebrating about my death? Because I know that we do not agree on a lot of points. And it really hurt me that they were speaking badly about him, especially since, yeah, I was there. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Just not in speaking.
Tiana, how did this affect your friend that you invited? How is she?
Yeah, so she is an international student. She was definitely crying alongside me a lot more than me because she has never thought that this would happen at her school. She came here looking for a better life. And the fact that this happened to her in a foreign country without her parents to call, it really impacted her greatly. But fortunately, we have each other, so we can support each other.
Question, Tiana, are you seeing a counselor about this? Because what you're describing is a traumatic response to what you saw. When I became a crime victim, I never sought counseling ever. Looking back, I should have. But I think you should consider it.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm currently not, but because I didn't think that it was going to be this bad until I started seeing the videos replay again. So I think I will seek out some mental health services. So thank you for your concern.
Now, I happen to be watching, Charlie. I can't say I saw blood. I can't say I saw him get shot. But as soon as that shot went out, he fell back into his left. And everybody hit the deck. Charlie has some security in front of him. But you got the sense that the shot came kind of straight at him. And I don't think there would be many vantage points too far away, because he was under an awning.
From our friends at Fox.
This is a father of two. Had a little girl, a little boy, wife Erica. He was engaging with the audience. He was throwing hats and other things to the audience, getting them kind of excited and pumped up before he spoke.
Like him or hate him, he's a media figure. He was magnetic.
This is not the best of us. We've got to do more to stop this from happening.
Conflicting reports about who tipped off police as to the identity of Charlie Kirk's shooter. This is what we know.
Somebody, and this happens a lot, it happened with the crazy Boston bomber, it happened with others. Somebody that slurs recognizes even a little tilt of the head, which nobody else would do. And somebody that was very close to him said, that's him.
Thursday afternoon, Matt Robinson looked at the FBI photos of Charlie Kirk's alleged shooter. He was shocked to recognize his son. When he arrives home, Matt Robinson confronts his son and Tyler Robinson confesses. The father encourages Robinson to turn himself in, but the 22-year-old says he would rather kill himself.
Earlier sound from our friends at Fox and Friends, straight out to Joseph Scott Morgan joining us, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, death investigator, and star of Body Bags, hit podcast series. Joe Scott, I, like you, would automatically recognize my son, even if he had on sunglasses and a hat. And I imagine all of his friends would, too.
Yeah, you know, you're with your child day in and day out. You see them in different arrays of clothing, right? Eyeglasses, hats, T-shirts, jackets, heavy jackets. Hell, I even think that if I saw my son in a ski mask, I could probably, you know, parse out who he was. So, yeah, this is not, you know, to us, this guy is a phantom, you know, when you see these images on CCTV. But the reality is that you go home, those that are most intimate with you, that know you very well, they're going to recognize you.
We are hearing tonight, Joe Scott, that DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, ties the suspect to Kirk's murder. When I heard about a towel being wrapped around the weapon or with the weapon, I mean, that is a perfect conduit for DNA. Now, originally, you and I discussed the possibility that there was no exit wound, that the bullet was lodged in the body of Kirk. There's no good way to discuss this, but the ballistics plus as to the body having the bullet in it would be, it could be a direct match to the gun, which we'll explain in a moment. But first, let's talk about the towel and what that means to the investigation. Everyone, this, as we were learning, there was a handwritten note that has been that was found. I don't know what's happened to it. Seemingly has disappeared. But the note apparently said, I've got an opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and he was going to do it. I'm going to take the opportunity. But right now, DNA, Joe Scott, towel. Explain.
Yeah, dig this. So if this guy brought the towel with him and he's got this weapon wrapped in it. Hey, Nancy, if we could go back to that shot of the roof where we think he was positioned. Guess what he's laying in up there? Direct sunlight.
gravel.
Guess what happens?
Yes, yes.
Guess what happens when we're in direct sunlight, sweating? This is not, you know, there's a high probability that the DNA that they're talking about on the towel, it ain't touch DNA. This might be complete strand because it may have transferred from sweat or grease off of his hands, oil. We, you know, produce oil on our fingertips. One other little interesting tidbit is that a screwdriver was also found, but yet that was found on the roof. That could be touch. I don't know. Might be sweat. Why would you need a screwdriver? Well, I think that perhaps to make any kind of adjustment or possibly to try to disassemble this weapon.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. To Chris McDonough joining us, Director of Cold Case Foundation, former homicide detective, worked over 300 homicides and now is the star of The Interview Room on YouTube. Chris, think about what Morgan just said. He even thought to bring a screwdriver to adjust the shot. For anyone that hasn't had to deal with ballistics like everyone on this panel basically has had to, other than Tiana, when you're taking a, let's just call it a sniper shot, a long shot, you have to take into account a wind gust. You have to take into account, believe it or not, pros take into account the temperature. You take into account movement on the part of the target. Long story short, he had the wherewithal, McDonough, to bring a screwdriver with him. Bye-bye, mental defect defense. That's not happening. He came prepared. Explain what he was going to do with that screwdriver.
Yeah, absolutely, Nancy. And it does go towards, you know, his specific intent to pull the trigger. And that screwdriver is used typically with a scope. And you would put that screwdriver up and you can adjust, you know, for that problem of wind velocity, the target moving, et cetera. So he was very well prepared.
It goes to the intent to Dr. Sue Kornbluth joining us, veteran analyst, author of Building Self-Esteem, owner of Dr. Sue and You. Dr. Sue, question to you. The intent to do an act. I mean, the guy came armed to the hilt with a screwdriver to adjust the scope.
Yes, Nancy, it does seem that he's had intent here, that this was premeditated beforehand, that he was planning to do this, and that he had all intentions of going up there and killing Charlie Kirk. This could have been planned and plotted for a very long time. As we do know, Nancy, that he did have access to firearms, as we have learned throughout the media for a very long time. So I don't have doubt that there was intent to kill and harm here.
Guys, we are learning so much as we go to air. Back to you, Joe Scott Morgan. And I want to do this very quickly. I don't want to go DEFCON 4 on ballistics, but you have performed so many death investigations where a bullet is still lodged in the victim's body.
Yep.
There's no good way. There's no positive when you're talking about a murder case. However, when you're speaking probatively about what do you need to prove your case, to have the actual murder bullet is very helpful because it can be linked back like a fingerprint to that particular weapon, that bullet had to be fired from that weapon, not just another .06 like it, but that particular .06. Now, I don't want to go into how the tester performed at the crime lab and but I want to talk about getting that match off a bullet fragment, because the bullet will be deformed after the shooting, most likely going through human tissue. If there's an exit wound and it hits the ground or it hits a hard wall, it will further deform the bullet. How do you get a bullet, a ballistics match, when the bullet is a fragment or has been deformed.
You have to retrieve the most robust portion of that bullet that still remains. And you have to go to great lengths to do that many times. If that round struck a bony structure within the body, it can deform. As a matter of fact, it can fragment. If that round hit anything, like you mentioned, like a hard surface externally, they would have been sweeping that area with metal detectors out there. So you have to test fire the weapon they have in hand with fresh ammunition and compare it against that round that you compare. The trick is, or that they recovered, the trick is, do you have enough of that round remaining that you can do a comparative analysis with?
Counting, not counting gang violence.
Oh my God. Go, run, run.
We've got a suspect in custody. The man who allegedly shot Charlie Kirk, 22-year-old Utah resident Tyler Robinson. We've got him in custody, turning himself in. The alleged shooter is actually 22 years old. He shoots, and then he's off the building. Then we see him limping as he's walking through, saying, hey, I got video of a guy running through the backyard.
What more have we learned as we go to air tonight? Listen.
He is observed on video in a plain maroon t-shirt, light-colored shorts, a black hat with a white logo, and light-colored shoes. When encountered in person by investigators in Washington County on September 12th, in the early morning hours, Robinson was observed in consistent clothing with those surveillance images.
That's from our friends at Fox, Sydney Sumner. So he had a wardrobe change?
Yes, that's what we are hearing. He arrived on campus in different clothing, changed into what we see in those surveillance images, then changed back into the other outfit, and that's what he was wearing when he was arrested.
That's one thing we had discussed immediately after Kirk's shooting to veteran trial lawyer Eric Faddis joining us, partner Varner Faddis Elite Legal, former felony prosecutor. Eric, that just adds on to the state's case for premeditation. He actually had a wardrobe change. He thought that much because we didn't understand how he blended in on campus. If he's dressed like a ninja, all in black with a face covering, a hat, sunglasses, all in black from head, neck to wrist to toe. But he didn't blend in that way because he brought a change of clothes. Now, this may not mean anything to a non-lawyer, but it means a lot to me. It's extremely probative. He thought it out. He planned it out that much that he knew he had to change clothes to blend in. What about it?
Yeah, Nancy, that's exactly right. So the change of clothes goes to premeditation. It shows that this was done after deliberation. These are all elements of first-degree murder. And on top of that, it undercuts any potential mental health defense because in insanity defense, he would have to show that he didn't know what he was doing was wrong, but he brought a change of clothes so that he could conceal his identity and get away with it. That shows he did know what he was doing. He had a conscious objective. He had the knowledge in terms of his actions, and that's going to be a big problem for him.
Well, another thing, look at it, Chris McDonough. You've combed the scene. By the way, those shots right there from our friends over at TMZ. Check it out. 8:07 a.m., he looks like a college student. 11:49, he's even put on jeans. So when he kneels down on that gravelly roof, it won't hurt his knees. I mean, he really thought this out, Chris McDonough. Tell us what you learned at the scene.
Yes, Nancy. At the scene, you can clearly see how he got up to the roof, number one, and then his sniper's nest was a straight shot right at Charlie Kirk. And then when you see these photographs of the surveillance footage from the neighborhood, he has changed those clothes. So it's an indication that he came early. He apparently scoped out the area he was going to go. What I could see while standing there, I was up on a perch looking at where he was firing from. It was an easy shot, to be honest with you. And then when he came off, he ran across the road there and dropped his rifle into the woods and then fled up into that neighborhood.
Those shots right there from our friends over at TMZ. When you were on campus, what did you observe?
Well, a couple of things. It was an easy shot from the location where he had chosen to shoot from. The center courtyard of that campus is a very closed area. And so you can't get there unless you go up on top of a roof. And the authorities had shut that down. And so he had to have gone and, you know, scoped out exactly the area where he was going to go.
You keep saying it was an easy shot. Many people do not believe 200 yards is an easy shot, McDonough.
Well, it's about 150 yards approximately from my observation. And it was a straight on shot. You could tell that if he hit Charlie in the center mass, i.e. right here in the center mass, look like fragmented, which, you know, Doc Morgan was talking about, and it hit him in the carotid artery, and that caused a bleed out almost immediately.
You know, it seems like he planned and plotted so much, but then drove right up in his car, in his vehicle, easily traceable. Listen.
Investigators reviewed additional video footage from UVU surveillance and identified Robinson arriving on UVU campus in a gray Dodge Challenger at approximately 8:29 a.m. on September 10th.
Just got Morgan, let me throw a technical legal term at you. Idiot. I mean, the towel, after all his planning and plotting and scheming and gnashing his teeth and twitching his tail and joking about Kirk online, idiot. Drives up in his gray Dodge Challenger, a muscle car. Surprise, surprise. Did he not hear anything about Brian Koberger and his white Elantra that was spotted by everybody and their sister and their long-lost cousin? A white Elantra was seen over and over at the crime scene, speeding away from the crime scene, speeding past the 7-Eleven that McDonough and I staked out, caught on video. Did he not hear anything about Brian Koberger? And then there's the other piece of crap, Rex Heuermann and his vehicle. Heuermann parked his vehicle outside of his home forever. Everybody knew it was his. It was connected to the scene. His vehicle tied him to serial murders. So this guy, the Kirk suspect, he ain't all that in a bag of chips. What about it, Morgan?
And listen to this. Just like Heuermann, just like Koberger, this vehicle that this person drove, this Challenger, is going to play in. It's going to have evidentiary value. Nancy, think about what you just said a few moments ago with the planning and everything. He used this vehicle in order to not only transport himself, but probably transport this weapon, any kind of ammo he had, any kind of tools that he may have used, any kind of prop to support the weapon, changes of clothes, everything, and yet he's leaving these breadcrumbs all the way along. These people are not the smartest in the world. They can kind of figure out the front end and kind of bounce off and get things done, but in the end, it's going to be their actions following the event that will always get them caught.
Tonight, we learn that the Kirk murder suspect was obsessed with furries. People that for sexual reasons like to pretend they're animals. That's a whole nother can of worms. But can we deal with hard evidence? Listen.
The messages also refer to engraving bullets and a mention of a scope and the rifle being unique. Messages from the contact Tyler also mentioned that he had changed outfits. Investigators noted inscriptions that had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, "Notices bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this question mark?" Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, "Hey fascist, exclamation point, catch, exclamation point." Up arrow symbol, right arrow and symbol, and three down arrow symbols. A second unfired casing read, "Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow Chow." And a third unfired casing read, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO."
And that from our friends at Fox. And you are hearing the Utah Governor Spencer Cox speaking. You know what? I hardly know where to start, but Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter, boy from the suburbs, silver spoon in his mouth, what, mommy and daddy still paying his car note, is talking about how he hates fascism. What does he know about fascism? And who the hey gave him a gun to start with? But let's just start with the page he took out of Luigi Mangione's notebook. He took the time to engrave the bullets. Take down Mangione. He makes me sick. Sydney, tell me about the engravings on the bullets.
Yeah, so each bullet was engraved very similar to Brian Thompson's shooting. The first one that Governor Cox had a hard time reading out loud, it's a meme. It's like role-playing that's commonly used among like furries and weeaboos. It's a term for white people who are very interested in Japanese culture in kind of an odd way. And we see this on sites like 4chan, Reddit.
A weeaboo is, but a furry crosses all socioeconomic boundaries. But weeaboo, yes, that's an obsession with Japanese culture. But, okay, you're talking about the engravings. Go ahead.
Right, yeah. So we see that kind of language on sites like 4chan, Reddit, and Discord. So capital O-W-O is actually an emoticon face, and this is one I don't really understand. I never really get what that face is trying to convey.
Let me explain it to you. It's when you notice an erection. There, do you understand that?
Yes, I understand what is being said, but that face in particular just doesn't really do anything for me. But apparently it's supposed to communicate interest of a sexual nature, obviously paired with noticing someone's erection. So that's the first bullet. It has to do with furries. It's role-playing language. It's kind of an online meme. So this was clearly satirical to Robinson when he engraved
that. Hold on, Sydney Sumner. Crime Stories. Sydney, this guy had way too much time on his hands. It's like Mangione. Please quit showing me Mangione's face. I don't want to see his $20,000 worth of orthodontia. Sydney, this guy, the Kirk shooter, obviously had way too much time on his hands. He is obsessed with furries. Okay, I'm not judging. I don't care what he does. But if he's got time to engrave bullets with sex talk and more, he's got way too much time on his hands. Did he work?
Apparently so. So in addition to engraving bullets, he was a student at a technical college working on an electrical apprenticeship, and that also included field work. So we know that he was working on a large project with a team where he was wiring a new apartment complex. So he did work, but somehow, get this, Nancy, he also had over 2,000 hours of video game streaming logged online. And that's only streaming. And that's over 10 years, but I did the math. And that is an hour a day playing video games, at least. And that's only what he put
online. And that's just streaming.
Right.
Okay, explain that, because a lot of people don't know the difference between playing and then what you put online. Explain. There he is crawling down the side of a building after murdering Charlie Kirk, a husband, a father. Explain, Sydney, what we're talking about, putting it online.
So there are sites like Twitch is probably the most popular one. And this is where it's basically like having a social media account, like an Instagram or a YouTube. And when you go on Twitch, you're live streaming. So people are watching you play your game, whether it's an online game or something like Stardew Valley, which is much more comforting, but people can watch you as you play your game live and comment on what you're doing.
Sid, I'm going to circle back to you. This is something I don't understand.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joe Scott Morgan, who has time to watch somebody else playing a video game? First of all, who has time to play 2,000 hours worth of video games? That said, But he wants time to watch his screen that he's posting of himself playing a video game. 2,000 hours.
Yeah, it seems
plus his obsession online with furries.
Yeah, I have no point of reference for that sort of thing, but I can tell you this. This guy's very visual, and let me tell you why. Anybody that would engrave on these live rounds, Nancy, let me throw this out to you. I got to tell you, you might not like me for saying this. I have no idea, but I got to tell you, I think this guy wanted to be caught. Why is he going to leave a message behind, and not just once, but on all of these rounds, drop the weapon?
Joe Scott Morgan, who's talking right now, that's such BS. Let me just clarify one thing. This is a yes, no. Are you a shrink? Because I think you're a death investigator. But are you, did you secretly go to night school and get your psychiatry degree, med school plus? Did you?
No, but I've come around a few that I thought may have.
That was a single response. You're on cross right now. Let's go to the actual shrink, Dr. Sue Kornbluth. It's not necessarily that he, quote, wanted to be caught. How about just straight out your rear end, arrogance that you're smarter than everybody in the room, that you're not going to get caught. All your friends, furry or otherwise, are not going to rat you out. They're going to consider you a hero. That's why he put a message on a bullet to murder a father of two. I don't care who agrees with Kirk or disagrees with Kirk. Like him, love him, hate him. Don't care. This guy had the arrogance, the hatred in his heart to put a message on the bullet decrying fascism and about his wannabe erection. Really? You know what? Go to hell. Go to hell. That's not wanting to get caught. You are an a-hole. Grade A, number one, red and rashy. What about that diagnosis, Kornbluth?
I think you're spot on, Nancy. And by the way, most of these people that murder people like this want that hero mentality out there after. That's why they carve their initials on it, so that the world can know that he did this. For all the people that hate Charlie Kirk, he did this for all of them. It's a sick mentality, and it's an obsessive mentality. And for me, Nancy, he has lived in a world of fantasy, hence the furries come in, because the group of people that belong to furries, a lot of them live in a fantasy world. Also, the video games that he was playing was in a fantasy world. So all of this goes together in a very nice psychological package that this kid, well, not kid, adult, was suffering from something, but it was premeditated. He wanted to be the hero and probably has some kind of psychological disorder that is going on, but we shall see.
Don't even tune up, doctor, about an insanity defense or some kind of a psychological defect. He knew what he was doing, and under our jurisprudence, the test is the old Macnaughton test brought to the U.S. from Great Britain as part of our common law. Did he know right from wrong at the time of the incidents? And the answer to that is H-E-L-L-Y-E-S. He changed clothes to avoid detection. He covered his tracks. He parked far away. He hid his weapon. He had to go back and retrieve his weapon. He tried to cover his face. Everything indicates he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he tried to hide it afterwards. That is consciousness of guilt. Case closed. And to back me up, he's no idiot that fell off the turnip truck, in the sense that he had a lot up here. He had a high IQ and really good grades. That doesn't negate the fact that he is one arrogant SOB. Watch this.
To receive the resident presidential scholarship from Utah State University. The value of this scholarship is approximately $32,000. This scholarship is available for 4 years or 8 semesters.
Tyler Robinson graduates from Pine Hill High School, securing a scholarship to his mother's alma mater, Utah State University, with his top 1% ACT scores. Robinson packs up for freshman year in Logan, Utah, but returns home just a semester later. Robinson continues living with his family, pursuing an electrician's apprenticeship at Dixie Technical College. Robinson and his brothers seem to have a special interest in guns, pictured at several gun shows.
If you know or think you know anything about Charlie Kirk's shooting, the state is still putting together a case. The case is going forward. You may think your information is insignificant, that it may not matter. It matters. Please dial 801-579-1400 or go online to tips.fbi.gov. Repeat, 801-579-1400. We remember an American hero, Sergeant Thomas Craig, Phoenix PD, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind his widow, Lynn, and six children. American hero, Sergeant Thomas Craig. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.